Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We've got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. We will be sending tens of billions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, to Ukraine, thanks to Mike Johnson, the GOP, and the Democrat Party, all kind of banding together for the most part and deciding that the foreign aid packages to Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and a ban on TikTok is the right move. And what was interesting is that I saw today Thomas Massie, Representative Thomas Massie, He took a video of some of the Congress people celebrating when they passed this foreign aid package. They all had Ukrainian flags and they were all waving them. It was very bizarre. And I'm not saying you can't support Ukraine, just like I'm not saying you can't support Israel, but I didn't see any American flags in the whole place. And I saw all of these Ukrainian flags. And the weird part is he took a video of it to show people, like, you know, there's all this support for Ukraine from the same people who don't seem to be that supportive of America. And he, you know, he put his own caption on it. And then the sergeant of arms from the House, from the Capitol, told him he has to take down the video or he's going to get fined. So he got in trouble for posting the video of all these people. And my question is, why do you care that he put the video up? You should, if this is something you're so proud of, waving the Ukrainian flag in Congress and sending all this money, why does he need to take down the video? What did he do wrong? Maybe it's some rule that I'm not aware of. But I bring this up because the reason Mike Johnson decided to capitulate and give the Democrats everything they wanted and give up any leverage we had on securing the border is leaving a lot of people scratching their heads. And someone who I've been reading a lot of lately on this front is John Davidson from The Federalist. And one of the arguments or one of the defenses for Mike Johnson, which Chris Bedford brought up, Jared, when he was on, is this idea that he got this intelligence briefing. He was made privy to the skiff. And because of that, he was so freaked out by whatever intel they told him that he cannot, you know, tell us. We'll never know what it is. But we just have to kind of believe that the secure facility that's used for classified briefings, that when he went there, he got information that made him feel as though we have to send all this money to Ukraine. Now, John's point in this piece that I included today on recommended reading is he didn't find out anything in the skiff to change his mind. He's just feckless. Like, that's just, given the two options of a Republican being afraid of some looming threat and a Republican being feckless, you can usually choose feckless. You can usually choose that he's just a weak-kneed Republican who was unprepared to be Speaker and was bulldozed by Democrats, and it's a tale as old as time. One thing he did mention, though, Jared, in this, which I found interesting, he said it's actually worse than what we think. So I've been talking about this foreign aid and saying, if you're going to send all this money, and I support sending money to Israel. They need our help right now. And if you're going to do that, though, the least you could do is secure our border first. Like, that has to come first before you send money to anywhere, before you send money to Israel, before you send money to Ukraine, before you send money to Taiwan. You've got to secure our border. You've got to protect the American people. I don't care what side of any issue you're on. That's not me being cruel. That's just common sense. A country without a border, without a secure border, is no longer a country, and that's the direction we're heading. But the reason I bring this up is because I've been talking about it like, oh, it's so bad he gave up all this leverage. He did nothing for us as far as the border goes. Chuck Schumer has been bragging about it to Democrats. Chuck Schumer, who is a shameful, shameful, power-hungry politician who should truly be embarrassed by his behavior over the last couple of weeks, especially in regards to Israel and his treatment of Bibi Netanyahu. But leaving that aside, Schumer's been going around and bragging to Democrats, we got everything Republicans got. Republicans got nothing. And I thought, yeah, that's bad. We got nothing out of this. It's actually worse because Davidson writes, Johnson didn't just fail to deliver on his repeated promises to secure the border. His foreign aid package will make the border crisis worse. Included in the bill, so this was passed during the weekend session, and then it got through today. They sent over some Democrat to hand Zelensky like the big check for, look at all the money we're giving to you. It was very awkward, very strange. But this bill, included in this bill, was roughly $4 billion for migration and refugee assistance, which is doled out to NGOs operating along the border and tasked with giving funds and travel assistance to illegal immigrants who have been released from federal custody. In other words, Johnson isn't just neglecting the border crisis, he's actively funding it. So if you thought he was a disappointment, it's actually somehow worse than what you thought. He's disappointed you in a more spectacular fashion than you probably first imagined.
Go big or go home.
Yeah, if you're going to do it. And this is on the heels of something that I really meant to get to when it originally came out last, it wasn't last week, it was 2 weeks ago. J.D. Vance, the senator from Ohio, wrote a piece in the New York Times, and it was titled, the headline was, "The Math on Ukraine Doesn't Add Up." Now, I was shocked because last time a senator wrote a piece in the New York Times that went against the grain, Tom Cotton, people were getting fired. You know, people were boycotting the New York Times. Like, I didn't think they put other opinions in there anymore. I thought they were past that phase of letting their readers get any sort of outside viewpoint on the world. But alas, they did put in J.D. Vance. And he wrote a couple of things here that stuck out to me. He said, Ukraine needs, and now this is obviously before this supplemental aid package of $6 billion was passed. So he was just trying to explain beforehand why he didn't support it. Ukraine needs more soldiers that it can field, even with draconian conscription policies. We've heard about that, that there's a lot of people who are fleeing. They do not want to fight for Ukraine. And it needs more material than the U.S. can provide. This reality must inform any future Ukraine policy, from further congressional aid to the diplomatic course set by the president. How much does Ukraine need and how much can we actually provide? Mr. Biden suggests $60 billion in supplemental means the difference between victory and defeat. That is also wrong. This is $60 billion, and it's a fraction of what it would take to turn the tide in Ukraine's favor. So J.D. Vance makes this argument. He also says something that I never thought of before, but there's a lot of proponents of sending this aid to Ukraine who are basically trying to say, well, it's a boon to our economy. You know, it creates jobs here. We can manufacture the weapons and it's good for everyone. It's like what that Joe Biden says. It's good for everyone, bad for no one. And J.D. Vance's point is, this idea that we should be prolonging a gruesome war with no end in sight because it's good business for America is gross. And that should not be the running excuse here. Well, we get to make the weapons and sell them, so it's good for us. Well, Trump was roundly criticized for saying to Caitlin Collins, I don't want to see more bloodshed. That was like the worst thing in the world. The evil dictator Donald Trump said, I don't want more people to die, and that was the worst thing in the world. But now we have politicians and leaders who are saying, well, and it's not just on the left. Like I said, this is a bipartisan issue. You have Republicans as well who are saying, well, it's good for the war machine. It's good for the industrial complex. We can build all these weapons and sell them. Yeah, but do we have any game plan for how this is going to end? Is there any strategy here? Is it still off the table that Zelensky talked to Putin? That's not even the same people who are asking Israel to essentially just hold tight until another October 7th happens. They don't even consider the idea of any sort of peace negotiation between Putin and Zelensky. Even if the idea of Ukraine beating Russia is becoming less and less likely as time goes on. You're not allowed to acknowledge that. Now, that brings us to CBS Mornings. Jared, lay this out for us.
All right. So just everything that J.D. Vance was talking about there, Joe repeated when he did his victory lap speech today, wearing his Ukraine flag and American flag lapel pin.
He said the whole thing about, oh, we can manufacture shells in Ohio and Patriot missiles in Arizona, yada, yada, yada.
I could see if Trump was saying that, that would be, that the headline would be like warmonger Trump brags yeah. about how many weapons we're making despite the bloodshed. Like, I could see how that would be framed as kind of a disgusting, grotesque thing to do.
Yeah.
But with Biden, it's okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, all right, so CBS Mornings this morning, Charlie Daggett, who's a reporter for them, was over in Ukraine, and he was doing a story on what was framed or supposedly supposed to be framed by them as the iron will of the Ukrainian people, who would not be deterred from their activities and their life from this harrowing war.
And he was in Kyiv.
And he is in Kyiv.
Which where that's where Biden was when he walked through the town square while the
right.
sirens
while the
were
air
going
sirens.
Off.
Yes.
And everyone was like, look at tough guy Joe. He's not afraid of anybody.
Because it was a dangerous, massive war zone, and Joe was basically ready to dodge all the bombs.
And the Secret Service was like, you're good.
Falling.
You're good. Just stand out there by yourself in the middle of the town square while the sirens are going off. Okay, so this reporter from CBS Mornings.
Yes.
Is giving us an update. Let's play cut 17.
A summer's evening. A sidewalk cafe. Smiling friends. It could be anywhere. Except it's not anywhere. Kharkiv is not far from the Russian border and within easy reach of missiles and airstrikes. And while many buildings remain boarded up, the remote yet real possibility of dying hasn't stopped its residents from living. Like 20-year-old student George Soldatenko and his friends Nikolai and Andrei.
Sometimes rockets really just boom, boom at night, and that could be scary. But you know, in the morning, when you wake up, you're trying just trying to have a good morning, your routine, and that's all.
I understand the idea behind this package, which is during wartime, people still live their lives, and I do get that. But we're getting such mixed messages from what's going on there, and it's
right.
really hard to figure out. And I know there's fog of war. I know that's elements of it, but it is strange because the next cut, it gets even stranger. This is cut 18.
Despite the rockets, Ukraine's nightlife is rocking. The bars and clubs are full. The place is jumping, music pumping, drinks flow freely, and they dance like there's no tomorrow. And it's not just here. Fun fact, there are now more bars and restaurants in the capital than before the start of the invasion. An act of defiance, sometimes, when they have to pick up the pieces and figure out how or if to carry on.
Yeah, let me just read you one more part here from J.D. Vance's piece in the New York Times. He says, the White House has said time and time again that it can't negotiate with President Vladimir Putin of Russia. This is absurd. The Biden administration has no viable plan for the Ukrainians to win this war. The sooner Americans confront this truth, the sooner we can fix this mess and broker for peace. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon. We will be right back. I hope it does, by the way. I hope it does. I hope that, you know, cooler heads prevail and there's some strategy that's put together here. But based off what I've seen of Zelensky accepting the next couple of billion dollars, I don't see that happening anytime soon. We'll be back with your calls. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Netflix dealt with the freeloaders. Its next act will be tougher. The streaming pioneer managed to deliver another quarter of blockbuster subscriber growth. This is from the Wall Street Journal. So Netflix doesn't want people mooching off other people's Netflix's accounts. And I thought that was going to be a bad thing for Netflix. I thought a lot of people who love to mooch, like yours truly, were just going to walk away. So I walked away. but other people signed back up. They bought their own subscriptions. And that got me thinking, where are we with the streaming apps? It seems like now there's so many, we're getting to a point where it feels like you might as well just be paying for cable. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is how many streaming services do you have? 1, 2 to 3, 3 plus, or I still have cable?
2.
21% say they have 2 to 3. 19% say 3 plus. 18% say 1. And 42% say I still have cable.
All right. Make sure you go vote before this poll ends at 3 o'clock. Let's go to Patrick. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Patrick?
Hey, Grace. I wanted to just build on what you were saying about the war in Ukraine. The reason why Biden doesn't have a plan for the Ukraine to win is because a plan is not possible. In order for the Ukrainians to push the Russians out of Ukraine, they would have to outnumber the Russians by 7-1, which is basic infantry tactics. In addition, and they barely have enough troops to muster a 1-1 or maybe somewhere between a 1-1 and a 2-1 ratio. The second part of that is the Ukraine is insolvent. You know, based on the Moody's and S&P, their debt ratings are either near default ratings or very high junk ratings. So they neither have the money power nor the manpower to push the Russians out. And the only thing that Biden did was buy time so that the Ukrainians don't lose before the election.
Yeah, it's a really, really strong assessment, Patrick. And actually, I'm glad you brought up the manpower situation in Ukraine, because J.D. Vance touches on that, you know, later in his piece. He says Russia has nearly 4 times the population of Ukraine. Ukraine needs upward of 500,000 new recruits, but hundreds of thousands of fighting age men have already fled the country. The average Ukrainian soldier is roughly 43 years old, and many soldiers have already served 2 years at the front, with few, if any, opportunities to stop fighting. After 2 years of conflict, there are some villages with almost no men left. This isn't coming from the perspective of someone who's rooting for Ukraine to lose. I really don't get that. I don't have that thought when I read J.D. Vance's piece. It's not the perception I get. I just get the perception that he's looking at the math and he's saying, this doesn't make any sense when you don't have the funds and you don't have the manpower. And like that last caller said, you have a president of the United States that seems content just writing blank checks and not really inquiring further about the end of this, about a resolution. I don't think wanting a resolution makes you a bad person if it's possible. But another part of this that J.D. Vance talks about, he says Mr. Zelensky's stated goal for the war, a return to the 1991 boundaries, is fantastical. So that's another element of why there's no resolution in sight. Thank you for the call. We'll be back with more calls when we return.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
The Donald Trump National Enquirer, Hush Money, Stormy Daniels, David Pecker, Alvin Bragg trial continues. All eyes on NYC. And you know what the crazy part of this is? I feel like I say that 6,000 times a day. There's so many crazy parts to everything. But Joe Biden is trying, through these court cases and through the weaponization of the DOJ, he's trying to make it so that Donald Trump, you know, he's trying to kneecap Donald Trump, essentially. Yeah, I just watched I, Tonya. He's trying to Nancy Kerrigan Donald Trump so that he can't go to all of these places and campaign. He can't go to these swing states. But the part of it that I think probably stings Donald Trump even more, besides having to be stuck in New York, amongst all this craziness, which we're going to get to in just a second, is the fact that while Joe Biden is telling Donald Trump, like essentially curating the justice system in a way that Donald Trump can't go anywhere, he's stuck in New York, he can't go to his son's high school graduation, all of these things. At the same time, Jared, he's not even going anywhere. Like, do you know what I'm saying? It's not like he's going, well, we're going to keep Trump stuck in New York City and I'm going to go all over the country and I'm going to spread the word. I'm not just going to keep the faith. I'm going to spread it about how great of a job I'm doing. He's still just puttering around like D.C. He'll go to D.C., then he'll go to New York, then he'll go to Pennsylvania. And I know maybe Pennsylvania, but for the most part, he's staying in areas where there's not really a risk of him losing. It's not like he's traveling all that much. He's keeping a pretty low-key schedule. And Donald Trump, if he had the capabilities right now, he would be going absolutely everywhere. But he's stuck at this courthouse as a judge Juan Merchan decides whether or not to fine him because he's violating the gag order, the gag order, which I think is ridiculous. Trump's not allowed to state actual facts about what's happening. He's not allowed to point out a conflict of interest. That's mean. That's threatening. That's harassment. Now, meanwhile, while that's going on in New York City, you think about all the traffic that's being caused, all the money that's being spent, all the NYPD officers who I know are doing a great job, but there's other things they should be doing. There's other things they could be doing beyond, you know, babysitting the Trump courthouse. But they don't have an option because this is what Alvin Bragg wanted. This is what Kathy Hochul wanted. This is what, most importantly, Joe Biden wanted. And meanwhile, at the same time, in New York City, here's what else is going on. Migrants swing bats, belts, and even traffic cones at each other in wild brawl outside NYC Hotel. This is the Row Hotel on 8th Ave. At least a dozen asylum seekers, the New York Post phrasing, not mine, squared off on Sunday afternoon with one out-of-control migrant seen swinging a bat menacingly at the mob before one of the combatants is taken to the ground and pummeled by four others. At least two men are seen wearing bicycle helmets as the two sides square off in the middle of the street, even as motorists stream by the middle of the brawl. Well, yeah, New Yorkers, they've seen it all at this point. They know if you're walking by the Row, if you're walking by the Roosevelt, you know there's going to be something going on. So you just got to keep your blinders on and keep walking and just hope nobody clocks you in the face. But isn't this an issue that should be higher on the priorities of Alvin Bragg and Kathy Hochul and Eric Adams? Could we maybe just for a minute take a deep breath and push Stormy Daniels out of our sight line for just a second and try to see the bigger picture, that there's other things going on that are problems, that are big problems for us? You know what I just thought of, Jared? This is totally random. Yesterday when I was driving home, and I'm curious your take on this. I was driving home. You know how people always complain about cyclists, like next to them, people on bicycles?
Yes.
And I've done that before, too. And Howie kind of warned me. He's like, be careful. The bicycle people, they get mad. They do not want to be trifled with. And he also warned me about that with beagle people, people who own beagles. They're very proud people. But I had a motorcycle in front of me yesterday. I think that actually aggravates me more than someone on a bicycle. And it might have been because this motorcyclist wasn't very good. Like, I didn't get the sense that he or she was very confident in their driving capabilities, but it was very, like, teetering, you know what I mean? Like, swerving a little bit, and they weren't in the center of the lane. They were more to the far right, and I was just thinking, oh, my, the whole time, Jared, I'm driving so hesitantly, like, so nervously, because this person doesn't really know what they're doing. It really aggravated me.
I can understand that. Yeah, I don't want to say specifically car, you know, roads are for cars, because
you don't want to be a carist.
I don't want to be a carist. And, you know, motorcycles, I definitely support over bicycles.
You think?
Like, yeah, I mean, just, you know, I don't want to risk, you know, upsetting the bicycle people, but I mean, motorcycles are more like cars than bicycles, so I get it. But yeah, it's tough, because anytime you get that not everything the same size type thing going, it gets tough. And there are cyclists, not all of them, but there are some of them that will go between stopped cars, that will get a little too close. And if you are not like really good at riding a motorcycle or riding a bike, yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking because in Massachusetts, you're at fault if anything happens.
I prefer the people who go in between the cars because at least they get out of my way. Like, at least they go past, they zoom past me and I don't have to worry about them. The person yesterday was staying in the right place, but I just kept thinking, like, every time I looked up, I was like, oh my God, this person is just, I'm just riding the brake the whole time. 844-500-4242. Oh, Vice President Kamala Harris is going to have a sit down with Drew Barrymore. Ooh, I hope she's prepping for that. I hope she's getting a good amount of prepping for that hard-hitting interview with Drew. Drew's going to say, you are so amazing. Tell us about what it's been like to be the vice president. We're all so excited for you. Ron,
it is painful to watch.
It's going to be painful to watch. Ron, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Ron? Are you there, Ron?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Kamala Harris and Drew Barrymore. I'll take things I don't care about for $1,000, please. I just wanted to say that ever since the COVID lockdowns, when we handed our entire lives over to the left, between then and these protests that we're seeing on colleges now and every insanity thing in between, this is just the direct result of go along to get along. And we have to be done with that. People need to hear from people that they know and trust how stupid and destructive everything that's going on today. And we know in our guts that this stuff is not going to end well. And also in front of as many people as possible, almost like an intervention. But the other thing too is, even if it's to strangers, that can be more fun because you never see him again. So you might say to somebody like, hey, dude, I just wanted you to know that someone put a Joe Biden bumper sticker on your car, you know?
Yeah, you know what's funny, Ron? You said we can't go along to get along. And I do find that that is a uniquely conservative thing, just not wanting to make people uncomfortable or not wanting to ruin a good time or bring politics into something. And I always go back to my friend Aaron Chadbourne. I hope he's listening. He better be. He does have another full-time job, but sometimes he's tuning in. He said something at the New England Young Conservatives event that we were at, and he talked about this story where he was working for Governor Paul LePage, and he went to a party, and another coworker of his brought his girlfriend who hated Governor Paul LePage. And it came up, their jobs, and the girl said something like, oh, how can you work for that fascist? Or, you know, just one of those throwaway, doesn't even know what she's talking about, very similar to these protesters at Columbia, just a line that she probably heard a million times. And Aaron said, what do you think that does to further the discourse? Like, what do you think that does to help anyone? And really just questioned her. He wasn't aggressive. He just said, like, what do you mean by that? Where are we going with this? And she was so taken aback. And after the back and forth, when she went to go get a drink or something, Aaron's friend said, wow, I really wish you didn't do that. You made that so uncomfortable. And Aaron said, I didn't make anything uncomfortable. She brought it up. She set the table. I just met her there. Like, it's not our job to shrink away from conversation. You'll notice that Democrats have no issue with that. I was just talking to Taylor about that today. When you're having a conversation and maybe you say, listen, this isn't helpful. This isn't going anywhere. Usually it's the left that wants to continue the conversation. They get like rabid about it. They just want to keep going. I was yesterday on with Sean Spicer, and he clipped part of our interview. And the part of the interview, I was just saying that in general, I feel as though Trump doesn't write off voters as much as Biden does. I feel like when you watch Biden at these events, he's very quick to call us Neanderthals or, you know, MAGA people or Nazis. And it seems like anyone who didn't vote for him, he harbors a lot of anger towards. And I said, I don't think Trump does that, because I think it's partially because Trump has an ego and it might be a little delusional, but he always thinks that there's certain people that he can win over. Even people that I would say, oh, that person, you're never going to get that person. They're completely deranged. I think in Trump's mind, he always feels like, give me 5 minutes, like the art of the deal. I can charm them. I can win them over. I can do a good job and they'll like me eventually. And I just made the point that that's why I think he's a better president for everybody, because he might really dislike politicians like Hillary Clinton and people who tried to screw him over and spy on him and overthrow him. But I don't think that even your neighbor with the Joe Biden bumper sticker, I don't think Trump is totally convinced that in some world that person could come to his side. And so Sean Spicer clips it, or his team clips it and puts it on Twitter. There's a woman who went so berserk. And I looked at her profile. Just, she's a real lady. She's a real, not a robot. Went so completely berserk at my comments. Oh, so you support a coup designing, plot overthrowing, racist, homophobic, sexual assaulter, la 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 la. I just wrote back just to have a little fun. I just said, hey, don't say that about Joe Biden. He's doing the best he can. And that set this lady off. She just kept replying to me, kept replying to me. I just kept sending back gifts because I was like, what are we, like, it's fine. You don't agree with me. But they're waiting. They're waiting to see something that upsets them so that they can lose their minds. And you're right. It's like, we can't be afraid to share our opinions, because most of the time we're sharing them in a very civil, very polite, very, you know, open-minded way. We're just telling people how we feel, and we're met with this hostility that's made to feel, make us feel like we're the bad guys. Like, we're the bigots, or we're, you know, I'm looking at this lady, I click on her profile, and she says, Mama 4, Democrat, vaxxed and relaxed, mean people suck. That's what her bio says. And I'm thinking, and what do you do all day? You wait online for a video cut of me talking about Donald Trump to pop up so that you can go nuts in the comments?
Thrice vaccinated.
But I'm the bad guy. I'm the one who should be ashamed of myself for saying something nice about President Trump. And not these nuts who go crazy online. It's like, we have to stop feeling as though we have something to be embarrassed about, or we have something to be, you know, quiet about. And I think people did that for a long time. And that's why they always say the silent majority, the silent majority. But that's not working anymore. It's not working to just shut your mouth and hope that sanity prevails. You do have to push back on some of these ideas. That is why during COVID, I got a little bit of hope, because parents were pushing back. They were seeing the curriculum their kids were being taught. They were seeing what was going on through these Zoom calls. They were seeing how depressed their kids were getting. And they decided, I don't really care if my work sees my Facebook post. I don't really care if my neighbor doesn't like my politics. I'm going to speak up for my child. That's more important. But it takes a lot for conservatives to ruffle feathers, I've noticed. And I'm guilty of it, too. I'm definitely guilty of it. I don't like to make things uncomfortable. But they have no problem with it. You ever met a Democrat who cares about making things uncomfortable at Thanksgiving? God, it's like what they live for. They're waiting for it. Pass the gravy. 844-500-4242. Face it, the world is a scary place. I was just reading to you guys about the migrants swinging the bats and belts and traffic cones outside the Row Hotel on 8th Avenue. You get stories like this every single day. Stories of home invasions, stories of violence. It can make you really scared. And it also is worth noting that this administration seems hell-bent on making it harder for you to protect yourself. But I have a solution for that. And that solution is FlipLock. I want you to go to FlipLock.com and I want you to check out this awesome device. You put it on your door hinge and it's going to create a door lock that is unpickable, unbreakable, and 10 times stronger than a deadbolt. This thing can withstand 1,500 pounds of pressure. Now, state police on horseback move in on UT campus. Wow. This is just more of the nuttiness going on today. But you can protect yourself from all of this craziness with the Flip Lock, because you don't need to install high-tech computers and cameras. If you can, that's wonderful, but a lot of people, that's not an option. Things are very expensive, especially right now. You want to be able to protect yourself in a simple way, in a quick way that really works, and that is FlipLock. I am so happy that they're a sponsor of this show. I really believe in this product, and I want you guys to check it out. And in fact, Revere Public Schools installed these in their classrooms. If you're like my mom, because my mom's always calling me saying, did you deadbolt the door? That's always her last question when I sign off with her at night. Is the door deadbolted? this is a really great way to have peace of mind. Send this to your kid who just moved out of the house. Send this to your grandkid who just moved into a dorm. Give yourself that extra level of security. Protect your family. Go to FlipLock.com and save 20% with code GRACE20. That's FlipLock.com, FLIPLOK.com, and save 20% with code GRACE20. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Imagine what we could do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Four more years. Four more years.
Who put a question mark on the teleprompter? Anything you put on there, Joe Biden will read. Damn it. He read the pause part out loud. He is Ron Burgundy. That's what you can expect. That was Joe Biden today. Yesterday, he was causing waves when he was speaking about abortion. He was at a rally in Tampa, and rally might be a strong word, playing a little fast and loose with that term. And he did the sign of the cross. Now, Howie Carr joins us now. Howie, one of the things that people have been talking about a lot lately is if you're a Jewish person in America, it's becoming more difficult, I would have to imagine, to stomach voting for Joe Biden. I would argue the same thing for Catholic people. He's doing the sign of the cross while talking about limits on abortion.
Right. I read the FBI whitewash of the investigation of Catholics who like to go to Latin masses. And they said, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just, it was just one of these proactive law enforcement devices. And maybe we exercised poor judgment, but there was no malicious intent. They were trying to infiltrate Catholic parishes where they said the Latin Mass, but there was no malicious intent.
No, of course not. The other thing that Howie keeps popping up all over the country are these pro-Hamas rallies, protest demonstrations at all of these schools and universities. It's very interesting to see how different states handle it. Like Florida, for example, when people are blocking a bridge there versus New York. And right now, I just saw that UT is having the horseback, the police on horseback showing up. So depending on what school you're at, certain things are tolerated and certain things they say, you're out of here.
UT is doing a good job. They abolished the DEI departments across the whole campus a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, I thought UNC was doing a really good job, but I think UT may be doing an even better job. University of Florida is doing a good job, too, I think.
They abolished the DEI department? That's an attack on
democracy. Yeah, all the departments, because they every place has a DEI. And they said, you could all apply. I hear there's an opening for a DEI person at Providence College.
Yeah, I heard the same thing. Just don't tell Stacey Abrams they're abolishing it, because according to President Stacey Abrams, that's an attack on democracy. Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great show planned. There's going to be a lot of Biden sound, because I'm already seeing it all over social media. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to check out the podcast if you missed it. Ben Weingarten was on in the 1 o'clock. We'll see you tomorrow.